Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Thank you, movie fans, for joining us at Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you on December 14th, 2010, and warning you to fasten your seat belts during today's show, because our guest is Fran Capo, the world's fastest talking female, who is also an actress, stand-up comic, author, voiceover artist, motivational speaker, producer, and TV host. Wow, that's a lot. Happily, Fran has agreed to discuss her movie experiences and share her opinions about the world of cinema with us today. We'll hear from her right after bringing on Nikki and Jazz to help with the show. Nikki, are we all set in the chat room?
We are ready to go.
Well, thanks, Nikki, to you and to our chatters, plus our other listeners, of course. We really appreciate everyone. And thanks also to Jazz for being here as our co-host again today. Jazz, are you in the mood to talk about movies now?
Oh, I might as well. I'm certainly not in the mood for Christmas. How are you?
I knew you were going to start out with Bah Humbug or something about Christmas. You still haven't got your shopping done, right?
Oh, it's all done. Yes.
Good, good. So you should feel good about that. But I can
tell
by the time.
Well, it's not long. I'm just giving everyone a lump of coal. So it's one trip down to the energy store, and then you're done. You know.
Oh my gosh, it's Mr. Scrooge himself. So we're going to have to spend some time today cheering you up, and we've got just the right guest to do that. And here she is now. Welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters, Fran.
Hi, how are you? Nice to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you agreed to come on our show. You know, I've been a big fan of yours ever since hearing you on Nancy Lombardo's Comedy Concepts show.
Oh,
and when
Nancy's
I found
great.
Out, yeah, she is great. In fact, she had a great show this morning, and she spent some time talking about you and encouraging the listeners to come over to our show this afternoon. She's just been so supportive, and I want to thank her for the referral, because when I found out about your film experience, I knew you would be a perfect fit for our show too. So we have a lot of questions, and I'm going to ask Jazz to get things started with the first one. Jazz, you've got the floor now.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to make sure we have a working microphone, which would always help. So,
right.
Hi, Fran, and thanks again for joining us. We're going to get to the book in a minute, but
this is
a movie show. So just to give us a little bit of your background, can you tell us some of your experience, what movies you've been involved with, and how did you get started in that aspect of the industry?
Okay, well, let's see. All right, so you know that I'm a comic, so a lot of times people will see you performing, you know, when you're doing stand-up comedy and things like that. And so basically, let's see, the first movie I ever did came out of the fact that I'm actually trying to think what the first movie I've done. I've done about six movies. The very first one that I've done, you know, you do extra work on movies and things like that. I'll tell you a funny way. I mean, because usually when I first start, a lot of times, even though I'm in this business, I don't always know who everybody is. I'm like, you know, who's that person? Who's that person? So the very first way that I got started was I was at this festival that was having all these, you know, actors and everything, and downstairs. It was at the Javits Center, and I noticed all these actors were going upstairs this, like, secret staircase. And I was like, well, why are those people going up that staircase? And there was, like, a big bodyguard in front of the staircase. And I went over to the guy, and I go, hey, what's up there? You know, I mean, it seemed like, you know, some mob connection things. I'm like, what's up there? The guy goes, oh, you got to have a headshot and a resume. Now, I did not even know what a headshot was, so I'm seeing a mob guy at the front, and I'm thinking, a headshot? What are those people getting killed upstairs? What's he talking about? So I'm like going, okay, get a headshot? I go, that's pretty drastic. It's for the comics who don't want to be in the business anymore, you know? So anyway, so I say to the guy, can I go upstairs? And then he goes, well, you know, it's only for invite. I said, well, why don't you invite me upstairs? So the guy's like, I was joking around with him. He lets me upstairs. Didn't know that it was a whole bunch of casting directors up there. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah, and so to be honest, I didn't even know what a casting director was. I mean, I was, like, really new in the business. I didn't know the terminology, the headshot, casting director. I didn't know what any of this meant. But I had heard of casting directors, and I heard of the casting couch. So I go over, and I'm waiting, and what they did was they had, like, 10 casting directors sitting down, and when a chair opened, they would call you, and you would sit in front of that person who, you know, on the other side had a vacancy. So I sit down, and the guy goes, you have headshot, resume? And then I went, actually, I don't know what a headshot is. And resume? No, I'm too busy. I said, but you're a casting director. Are you the people that make the girls lie down on the couch and do things with them? And the guy looks at me like, what are you talking? You know, even if it was true, like, he's going to admit it, right? So I'm like, okay. So he goes, so he just starts laughing. And then he goes, how'd you get up here? I said, oh, I snuck by the guy because I didn't want to get the guy in trouble. So I said, oh, I snuck by the guy. And I go, so listen, what are you guys doing up here? He goes, well, we're actually casting for David Bowie is having a video, and the video was for his song Fashion. Now, I had heard of David Bowie, but honestly, I didn't follow his music. There was no such thing really as music videos back then. David Bowie was the first one really doing a music video. Mm-hmm. And so then what happened was, so the guy goes, listen, I like your, you know, that your chutzpah, that you had the nerve to, you know, walk past the guy and come up here without a headshot, and you're asking me about sexual favors on the couch. And so he goes, can you dance? I go, yeah, of course I could dance. And, you know, so I'm thinking, like, disco dancing. I'm not thinking he's talking, you know, like, you know, professional dancing or whatever. And so he goes, you have training in dancing? I said, yeah, I have a lot of training in dancing. Every weekend I go to the nightclub, you know. So the guy goes, all right, call this number. This is my casting office on Monday. And he goes, come in, we'll take a shot of you, and blah, blah, blah. So I go in, I do it, and I get the part, and it's a paid thing. I go to the set, and, you know, all these other people have professional credits with the dancing and all this stuff. And so I'm just over there, and everybody's nervous because David Bowie's there. And I'm like, what's the big deal? I don't get it. So one girl goes, oh, my God, I'd love to go over to David Bowie. So I go, so go over to him. She goes, oh, no, you can't do that. I go, why can't you do that? It's a couple of steps. Just walk over. Say hi to the guy. She goes, you can't do that. So, of course, I don't know. I go over to him. I go, hey, my name is Fran. And he goes, my name's David. I go, that I know. And then he goes, I said, you see that girl over there? She wants to come up to you, but she's all shy and everything. I don't know why. I think she wants to ask you for her autograph. Anyway, if there's a way you could go over and give her an autograph, I think she would really like it. So David Bowie starts laughing at me, and he goes, well, why did you come over? I said, I don't know. You're human. I'm human. I figure, what the hell? You're sitting down. I'll come over and say hi to you. So he goes, he calls over the guy on the set, the director, and he goes, put her up front. I want a close-up of her. So that was my first experience getting paid and David Bowie pulling me out of the crowd scene, pulling me up front to get a close-up, all because I had the nerve to walk up to him and say hi. Well, that casting agency – I mean, yeah, exactly. So that was my first experience when you say, how did I get started? Because then that casting agency started using me in different – you know, we got this film, we got this film. And now I have a film that's out now, my latest film. It's not my film, but I'm in it. It's called Breaking and Entering. And it's about breaking world records and entering the world record book. And I'm in it. And the screening, one of the screenings is in Brooklyn and in January. And they've asked me to come down and to actually host the screening.
Oh, wow. And you're in it for your Guinness Book of Records work. The fact that you are
right.
The world's fastest talking woman,
right.
And you have four other records. Is that correct?
Yes, I hold the fastest talking, and then I'm also the only author to do a book signing at the top of Kilimanjaro, and the only author to do a book signing down by the wreck site of the Titanic. I had a theme song. I know, yeah, it's like, what kind of crazy records are these? And then I had a theme song written, literally, I was speaking to this guy, it just turned out as a fluke, kidding around. I said, hey, maybe one day you do a theme song on me. 15 minutes later, the guy calls me back, he wrote the song, asks for permission to go into the studio, goes into the studio, and I said, well, since you wrote that song, song in 15 minutes and I'm going to, in the next hour, have it produced, I'll guarantee you that I could get that song on the radio within 24 hours, national airplay. And I did. So it became the fastest song from creation to national airplay, 24 hours.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you're adventuresome, and you have chutzpah. And breaking, you mentioned breaking and entering.
Entry.
And I think that I've heard it's been very well received on the film festival circuit. I think it's actually already won two audience favorite awards. Am I right about that?
Yes. And the trailer could be seen, because all my movies are up at IMBD, you know, the movie site, and other movies that I've been in. Also, I was in a movie called Sunday, which actually won the grand prize award at the Sundance Film Festival. So luckily, the films I've been involved with have won a lot of awards, and this Breaking and Entering one is now just starting to go around to the festivals and is now starting to win, to win awards, which is really cool.
You must be
great.
The lucky
well,
charm, so directors should all be looking out for you instead of just the ones using you so far.
Absolutely.
Oh,
What was Sunday about, Fran?
Sunday was actually an interesting movie. Sunday was about a out-of-work actress who runs into a guy, and it turns out, and she thinks the guy is a casting director that she worked with a long time ago, but it turns out that the guy was a homeless guy that literally just kind of crashed a Christmas party that she was at.
Oh.
And so she mistakes him, and he doesn't correct her and say that he's not the director. And so she decides that she wants to get back in good with him because she wants to get back into the movies. And so she actually, you know, sleeps with the guy and everything. And her ex-husband happens to come over, who was also an actor. And he's like, that's not the guy. And she's like, don't try to discourage him, blah, blah, blah. And so I play her best friend in the movie.
Oh.
And so the whole thing is, after at the end, she never figures out that the guy is not a homeless guy. He just goes back. He goes back to the shelter where he's living, and everybody's asking, what kind of day did you have? And, you know, they can't believe it, and she's wondering why the director didn't call her. So it was like the day in the life of what happens when somebody, well, I guess desperately wants their career, whatever. And it was entered in the film festival at the very last minute. It was a really late entry, like at the 11th hour, and it wound up winning the grand prize.
Well, it sounds like a fun movie, but now the next one that I was wanting to ask you about sounds like it might be more serious, The Signs of the Cross, funny movie?
It's actually The Signs of the Cross was another situation, another movie situation where, and I should tell you this, my life seems to always unfold because I'm willing to take risks. And that,
yes.
As you could tell, you know, jumping out of airplanes, eating fire, all these crazy things. But the movie Sunday that I was in, literally, it was my son was in the movie first, and we got called at the last minute for him to go on the set and to play a part because they needed a kid. So it was like, you know, that night, the next morning, we went in, and I was in a rush, and I went up to the director, and I said, just out of curiosity, you know how long this movie's going to take to shoot? Like, how long my son's going to be here? Because I got to go someplace. And so the director said to me, wait, stop. What did you just say? I said, I got to go someplace. I mean, you know, how long is this going to take? I mean, what's happening here? And so he goes, do you want to be in the movie? I go, what are you talking about, like now? And the guy goes, yeah. He goes, you would be a perfect part that we're shooting. I said, you want to put me in the movie? I said, I don't have any costumes. And he goes, no, we could put you into makeup, blah, 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 blah. And that's how I wound up in that movie. Well,
oh, my gosh, this is amazing. Everybody auditions except Fran.
It's like such a bizarre way. It's like, and then the Signs of the Cross, the same thing happened. The movie was already shot. It was almost in the can. I mean, they still had to do things on it. And the casting director, Donna McKenna, called me. Somebody else was telling me that they were on the movie set. And one thing led to another, and then Donna told the director about me. Oh, my friend, you know, Fran Capo wanted blah, blah, blah. She's the fastest talker. And the guy goes, I got to find a way to put her in the movie. So they actually wrote a scene with a fast-talking real estate agent. So I didn't even have lines. All I had, I had lines, but, I mean, I didn't have to memorize lines. The guy said, I need you to just pretend you're selling me this apartment, ask for this amount of money, and point to the fact that the church across the street has a big cross on the top of it. As long as you hit those three marks, make the scene funny whatever way you want. So basically, I improvised that scene. And there was a lot of guys from The Sopranos in that movie. It was all about a guy trying to find his religion and his girlfriend gets killed. I mean, it was actually a drama. But it was all the fact that he's raised Catholic, and so each time he feels guilty about certain things that are happening. And, I forgot what that actress's name. Carol Alt is in it. She's the lead lady. And so I get... When I'm there at the screening, it was actually very funny because I have a lot of the Soprano guys, you know, sitting in the audience. I have Carol Alt and things like that. And my scene, because it's actually the only funny scene in the movie. The rest are serious scenes. So the only funny scene in the movie. So I got an applause while I'm sitting at the screening, and I'm sinking down in my chair because I'm like, going, oh, my God, this is embarrassing. And so I was like.
Oh, no.
So it was really cool. So that led to me getting cast in another movie. And that's pretty much luckily how my career has been.
Well, every waitress out there right now who's a wannabe actress who spends their weeks going to cattle call after cattle call waiting for the big break hates you right now. I just wanted you to know.
I know.
As they're listening to the show, if they see you on the street, there's going to be daggers coming at you out of their eyes.
But you got to understand, this is the other thing. I know I'm saying it like that, but which is true. This is how the movie stuff happened. But also, I have paid my dues. I've been in the business for 20 years.
Yeah.
I have, you know, when I started comedy, I was 3 o'clock in the morning performing to the two drunks at the comedy club and stuff like that. It's just that the film stuff seemed to happen this way. But I paid my dues as far as comedy, as far as speaking engagements and all the other stuff. So they can throw half a dagger, not the full dagger.
Oh, absolutely. Well, before we leave the topic of films, I definitely want to know what are your personal favorite films. I know that you are a film fan, so
yes.
Now's your chance to tell us what you think are your favorite films of all time.
I know you're going to think this is incredible. One of my favorite films is Shrek. And now, I know that's not obviously actors, but, I mean, I'm a voiceover person, too, so I obviously appreciate all that stuff, and I do love Shrek. But as far as regular films, Gone with the Wind is one of my favorite movies of all times. And I know, Betty Jo, that that's one of your favorite movies because I read your book, Confessions of a Movie Addict. So I know that you are also a Clark Gable fan as well.
Yes, that's no secret, right? And thank you for reading the book. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah. So that's what an extreme from Shrek to Gone with the Wind.
I know. You would think, like, what? You know, but, I mean, I have a lot of favorite movies because, you know, I like all different genres. I mean, if I have my preference, I always like seeing, you know, comedies. And if you were to ask me, like, what my favorite comedy is, I mean, I just kind of love so many of them. I mean, my mom used to love Peter Sellers. So, you know, I would watch, you know, Peter Sellers movies with her and things like that. But just, you know, I love Alfred Hitchcock. I know that's not comedy, but I do seem to like a lot of the older films. But, I mean, then again, I like films like, you know, I'm just thinking of the more recent ones when I came out. I love the Titanic, maybe because I went down to the Titanic, so that is a special, you know, place in my heart because I'm like, oh, my God, I was down there, right down there where they're shooting. I was in that same spot. So, I mean, I you know, that has a different type of meaning for me as far as, you know, that comedy-wise. You know, I'm trying to think, like, why can't I think of any comedy names that come to me? Because it's just like I do happen to like, you know, I do like Jim Carrey, so I like a lot of his films,
yeah.
You know. I loved Mask, you know, as, you know, what was one film that I really liked also. And Liar, Liar, you know, I liked that movie. So I'm kind of all over the place because I go to movies a lot. I mean, I think I went to 3 movies this week. Saw Love and Drugs. I saw 127 Hours, the documentary.
Which wasn't a comedy.
Yeah, that definitely wasn't a comedy. But Love and Drugs was a comedy. And I'm just thinking, it's like as they come up, I just love, you know, saying, well, what do we got out there? Okay, let's go see it, you know.
Well, that's the same way.
You mentioned paying your dues in comedy, and since you brought it up, you know, that is really hard. I can relate, you know, going back to my time working as a stripper, it's very often the same thing when there's very few people in the club.
Oh,
how
Chippendale.
How did you
I
get
thought
started
you were a
in,
Chippendale dancer. say.
No, no, that's what made it even harder, because I was working at the clubs where the girls are supposed to dance, which made it really tough to get a break. But how did you get started in that? You say it goes back about 20 years. That's really hard to get a break. How was that for you, and you know, when did you start seeing some success from that?
From stand-up. Well, the way that it happened with stand-up, I was actually I was in Queens College, and when I was in Queens College, I was going to be a lawyer. That was my, you know, and I was an accounting and philosophy major, which, of course, doesn't go together. You know, in your brain, you're going, 1 + 1 = 2. Why? You know, and so, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, thinking, all right, counting, you know, accounting and philosophy is like, how the heck did they go together? My left and right brain obviously worked together at the same time. So anyway, so I was doing, you know, I was in my third year, my junior year of college. And I had always sort of wanted to do stand-up, but there weren't a lot of female stand-up comics. It was like, you know, Joan Rivers was like the only one at the time, not counting Phyllis Diller, because she was at like a different generation. And then that was it. There weren't really that many female comics. And so what happened was, I remember thinking I would really want to do stand-up comedy. What a cool way to make a living. And so I'm very big religious-wise, and I was to say spiritual-wise, because I'm a Catholic, but I don't always go to church, but I do pray a lot. And so I was like, you know, God, if I should be a stand-up comic, you know, please give me a sign. And what happened was, the next day, I literally went to one of those car fairs, and I signed one of these things that had, like, you know, analyze your handwriting, and it said, you have a great sense of humor. Use it to make money. And I was like, oh, come on, that's ridiculous. This is just a handwriting analysis machine. So, you know, passed it off. Then a couple of days later, I'm at Great Adventures. I'm standing online talking to my friend, joking around with her, and a guy behind me online taps me on the shoulder and goes, I apologize, but I've been overhearing your conversation, and I just have to let you know, I was at a comedy club the other day, and you're actually funnier than a lot of the comics. And I'm like, oh, that's just some guy online at Great Adventures. Meanwhile, God's going, what do you need? How many signs do you need? What the hell's the matter with you, lady? So I'm over there. So then the next thing that happens is I go back to Queens College, you know, the following week, and I read this monologue, and apparently it was Edward Albee, the zoo story, and I didn't realize it was supposed to be about a guy committing suicide, and I read it as a comedy, and the teacher said, well, I've never heard it read that way before. And so one kid in the class came up to me and said, listen, I do stand-up a comic strip. You would be really funny. And I said, no, I'm not. And then he goes, I'll tell you what, I'll give you my act. I go, no, you can't give me your act. So meanwhile, all these three signs, I'm not taking as a sign. And so I say to God, God, listen, can you please send me a sign? I'd really like to know whether I could do stand-up, but can you make it convenient? And, God forbid, you know, you just ask for it. You got to make it convenient. So I ask God, can you make it convenient? So I go to school the next day. The front door is locked. It forces me to go through the side door, which is where the acting department is. And I see this big sign on the wall that said, stand-up comedy auditions today only. And the winner gets to perform at a club, but the club was an Irish pub that was 2 blocks from my house, which happened to be like 10 miles from the school. So I was like,
convenient.
Okay, that is the convenience. That's my sign. I got to do it. And I looked at the time, and the auditions were going to be up in like the next 10 minutes. So I go, I do this audition literally in a broom closet. I audition for the guy. The guy goes, all right, we're going to pick the winner of this contest, and we'll let people know, blah, blah, blah. I run out, don't hear from the guy, call him back the next week. And I say, listen, I was just curious, you know, who won that contest. He goes, you did, but you ran out so quick you didn't leave your phone number. And we posted that you, you won on the wall, but you never called. But I never went back through that entrance, because that entrance, the front entrance that had been blocked because construction was open, and then I kept going back through the front entrance. So I literally had 3 days to prepare a half-hour comedy act. So I went on stage the first night. I got a standing ovation. The second night, I bombed terribly. I was so embarrassed. I went in the bathroom. I was crying. I didn't want to be seen. But an agent had seen me the first night and asked me to perform at his comedy club. That was like 6 months later. And then I wound up doing stand-up comedy from there. And then I did the typical run that everybody does, you know, performing at all the clubs, passing at the clubs, and for years and years and years, you know, just working out your act, building it up, then starting getting booked, and then, you know, working your way from emceeing to middling to headlining, and then working all around the country and the world.
Well, you have paid your dues. I mean, that's quite a way to get into comedy, a sign from God, and even a convenient making it convenient. That is really great. Well, when did you start doing your Mae West parody, June East? When did you start doing it? How did that come about? And then, and I hope you'll do some June East for us on the show.
Absolutely. Well, I guess what happened was when I was doing stand-up, as a stand-up comic, you're always trying to figure out different ways to get seen by people. And at that point in time, they had that TV show on. Ed McMahon's daughter was casting it. It was called Star Search. And
yes.
So Star Search was out, and me and a couple of other comics were trying to figure out how could we get on Star Search? How could we, audition for Star Search? So what we heard that there were auditions, I think it was in Boston. I don't remember actually what town. So we decided that me and two other comics decided we were going to drive to Boston, and we were going to basically break into those auditions. And so we go through this whole thing. Anyway, it winds up, we don't get the auditions. We're all discouraged that we couldn't get in to get the auditions. So I said, we got to figure a way to let people know about us. And my friend Alan Chan, who's a stand-up comic, he said, you know what? I know the guy, Percy Sutton, who owns WBLS Radio. His son works there. Maybe we could figure out a way to get a job there. So I said, well, let's try to get an audition. So we went to the station, and they were like, we're not hiring anybody. This is not comedy. We do music. We don't need stand-up comics. And we're like, oh, come on. And they said, all right. And I think they did it just to get rid of us. They said, you come up with 10 comedy bits by Friday. It was a Tuesday. And we'll let you on the air a couple of times. Well, we wrote those 10 comedy bits that night, and the next day we told them we had it done. They were so impressed that we had it done the next day that we actually got asked to come on the show, and then we were hired to help the morning guy do comedy skits. So I wound up doing that, and then one day I was listening to this record, and it was a rap record called Rapping Do. And kidding around, I flipped over the record, and I said, I could do a really cool Mae West impression. So what I did was I started doing this Mae West character. First I said to the host, Sergio Dean, I said, you know what, I could do a really cool Mae West impression, but I call the character Junice. Flings the weather and traffic copy at me. The little red tally light comes on. You have to start talking in radio. So I'm like, today the weather and traffic is. And in the 30 seconds I happened to do it, a lady from the Daily News called up and said, I'm doing a story on weather and traffic, people. How long have you been doing it? Yeah, I'm not going to tell her 30 seconds. So I said, I've been doing it a while. So she said, oh, I really like what you're doing. What are you planning on doing next? And kidding around, I said, I'm thinking of breaking a world record. And so what happened was she printed in the paper the very next day, the Larry King Live people called me up and asked me to go on the show and break the record. I didn't even know who Larry King was. All I heard was cable, and I'm like, is this some kind of porn thing? I'm like, oh, honey, no, it's a national show. So I go on the call up, Guinness, what do you have to do? They say something from Shakespeare or the Bible. I had 5 hours to practice. The Guinness people told me, that's what I had to do. And the Larry King Live people said that, I could come on the show. And then so I had 5 hours to practice, was practicing in the limousine. They told me something from Shakespeare or the Bible. Me and Shakespeare never got along, so I did a prayer from the Bible my mother had taught me. And I'm like, and I'm like saying it faster and faster and faster, like my head's going to fall off. And I say it, I get to a studio, and at the time I broke the record doing 603 words a minute, 585 words a minute, and then I rebroke it at the Guinness Museum in Vegas doing 603 words a minute. So now on the radio station they're announcing, I'm the Guinness record holder, blah blah blah. So I almost had two personalities, Fran the fast talker who writes comedy, and this Junice character. So I started doing the weather and traffic as Junice, and I would do other comedy skits as Fran Capo. And then one thing led to another. I flipped over the rap song, and then someone called and asked if it was a real rap song. And so I said, oh, yeah, we're thinking of having it published, whatever. So they said, well, we have a tour coming up with LL Cool J and the Fat Boys. Do you want to go on the road with LL Cool J and the Fat Boys? So I was like, sure. So the next thing I know, I don't even really have the record out yet. So I had to go get somebody, and I got this guy, Patrick I don't remember, it's Patrick something, I think it was Patrick Adams. He had done a song called Push, Push in the Bush, which was a real popular song back there. He did the music to the Junie song, and the next thing I know, 3 days a week I'm on the road with LL Cool J and the Fat Boys, and the other 2 days I'm in the studio doing the fast talking and the other stuff. So Billboard magazine picked it up, and they actually did a whole thing in Billboard magazine about my record, and that's how I became June East, going on the road.
Oh my gosh, what a story! And can you do a little bit of June East, and then we're going to get into your books, because I don't want to forget to talk about your wonderful books. But let's hear a little bit of June East.
Oh, what I used to do is I used to do movie reviews as June East, and, you know, because she has a very, very specific way of doing stuff. And, you know, so I would have lines like, I'd love to kiss him, but I just washed my hair. And I would just keep doing that. And there are times I've actually picked up my boyfriend dressed up as June East at the airport, and I've done things as June East going to Atlantic City and doing the Frank Sinatra, Liza Minnelli high roller party. I tell you, I've just been all over the place.
That's incredible. You do sound just like Mae West. Thank you so much for doing
You're
that.
You're welcome.
But I did promise you that we would talk about your books. I have to say that I'm almost finished with Almost a Wise Guy. But before talking about that particular book, which is my favorite, you mentioned about doing a book signing at the top of Kilimanjaro, and you have to tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, the thing is, when a book comes out, I've written 15 books, and the way that it started, 15 books. So the way that it started was, you know, I have a lot of friends in the business, and, you know, so everybody's writing different things and stuff, and I belong to this writing group, and I had the way that it actually started with my very first book was somebody saw me as a speaker, saw me perform, asked me if I did a motivational speaking. I said no, and they said, oh, you should do motivational speaking. You hold a world record, blah blah blah. One thing led to another. The next thing I know, I'm in a conference where they're talking about how to become a speaker. So I'm joking around with the guy, and I'm like, yeah, all right, well, why don't you tell me where you're performing? The guy goes, well, you know, you first have to have a topic and blah blah blah. I said, why don't you just tell me where you're performing, and I'll see if I can get in there. And the guy, I was performing on a cruise ship. I call the cruise ship up. I don't even have a topic as far as talking is concerned. And so what winds up happening is I called the cruise ship and I said, hey, I understand you hire speakers. And they're like, yeah, we hire speakers. And, you know, what's your topic? And I said, well, it depends on the audience. They said, we have an audience over 65. I said, oh, I have a topic, how to have more energy in the later years. They're like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. So I get booked on this cruise ship. And I come back and I wind up doing this talk on this cruise ship. And the guy who had the convention, which was the American Speakers Association, I said to him, hey, listen, I want to tell you, got booked on the cruise ship. He goes, I can't believe you did that. You didn't even have a talk. I said, I wrote a talk. So he goes, you know what? I'm going to use you as the keynote at my next convention. So I say, fine. And so I said, how much time do I have to do? He says 15 minutes. I think he says 15 minutes. I call him back 2 weeks before. I said, listen, I got my 15 minutes ready. He goes, oh, no. You got to do 50. I go, 50? He goes, yeah. And he goes, and you got a book? I go, why? You have to have a book to be a speaker? And he said, oh, no, but if you have a book, you could sell them at the back of the room. So I said, all right, I'll write a book. So I had 2 weeks, and I wrote a book on the topic that I was talking about, which was humor and business speaking. And I had Staples became my publisher. I made up 400 copies, and I wound up selling all 400 copies, you know. And so I was like, this book thing is good. So I had written, every time I did a speech, I wrote up books and I would tape spiral bound them. And after I did three of those, I was, because I did a book on voiceovers, did the book on humor and speaking, did another one on how to break secrets of publicity. I said, I want a real book, you know, like Pinocchio. I want to be a real boy. I want a real book, not one I'm spiral bind, you know, binding. So I was a member of a writer's group, and somebody said, they're looking for someone to write a book called It Happened in Utah. And I said, oh, no offense, what happens in Utah? It's going to be a brochure. How about It Happened in New York? So the lady goes, we don't do East Coast books. And I go, come on, I'm a stand-up comic, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, she tells me, I said, can't I do It Happened in New York? And so she said, well, we, you know, send a proposal. I had no clue what a proposal was. I said to him, well, send me your proposal so that I'll write it the way that you guys like. And then, of course, I studied it and submitted it. And I said, but listen, if the New York book does good, can I do a book called It Happened in New Jersey also? Because I figured I'll do a book for wherever I do stand-up, which is New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. So the New York book wound up being one of the best sellers. It happened in New York in the series. So then I got the contract to do It Happened in New Jersey. Then I got a contract to do It Happened in Pennsylvania. Then the same company, Glow Pequot, asked me to write It Happened in New York City. And so those became my first series of books. And what happened was with each one of those books actually now is going into second edition. And for anybody who's a writer, you know that to go into second edition means it has to have sold X amount of copies before the publisher would put any money, you know, back into a book. And
Absolutely.
So it sold. And so then I did those books. And as you know, so I did that series. And then my dad, unfortunately, was dying of, he had cancer and he wanted me to write a story about his life. And so I said, he goes, look, I got the story and everything. It's called, Almost a Wise Guy. And so, I was like, Dad, I don't know, because he had one brother, a highly decorated police officer, and the other one that was in the mob. And I was like, I don't know if this is a good thing. And I lived in Howard Beach, John Gotti country. So I was like, Dad, this. So the beginning of the book says names have been changed to protect the author. So I wrote the book in 4 months, and it's based on my dad's life. And so what it is, it's a comic crime novel, and it's basically like Catcher in the Rye meets Analyze This. And
yes, and it should be a movie.
It
should be a movie.
Well, it's funny, and the thing is people don't believe all the true stories about that's happened. And, and it is a very funny, fast pace. It takes place, in the Greenwich Village where my dad grew up, and he really did have all these crazy things that were happening. I mean, when you have one brother that's in the mob and the other one that's, with the police, you get caught in the middle of different things, and it's always his tugging forth back and forth of what was happening. But I had 4 months to write it because, unfortunately, at that point, my dad had cancer. So when the book was done, my dad, I read the book to my dad, and he goes, now what? I go, what do you mean, now what, Dad? He asked me to write the book. I wrote the book. He's like, aren't you going to get it published? So I was like, oh, I should get this book published. So I went to a self-publisher, but I wanted the book to have more notoriety than just when a book release happens. So I was trying to think, well, what could I do? And then I was like, well, I could do I was going to climb Kilimanjaro anyway, so I said, why not a book signing at the top of Kilimanjaro? So that'll get publicity. So that's how the book signing at the top of Kilimanjaro happened. I wound up bringing up that book, and I also brought up another one of my books up there, and it got a lot of notoriety. And then after I did that, I said, well, if I did a book signing at the top of the world, how about the depths of the sea? And I wound up doing a book signing down by the wreck site of the Titanic. And I wound up doing 231 radio shows advertising Almost a Wise Guy.
Oh, wow. Well, I am so glad you wrote that book because I am enjoying it, and your writing, it just comes alive, and the characters' names, I know you said you had to change the names. I mean, it's like names like Charles Dickens would pick. I mean, Frankie Crooks.
Oh, no, Crooks, no, no. And
Louis
funny.
Patui.
Louis Patui, right.
It's just so great. I'm going to ask Nikki to give us a little report from the chat because we've been kind of neglecting our chatters. Let's see if there are any comments or questions from the chat right now. Nikki, do you have anything you'd like to share with Fran from the chat?
We do.
Oh,
yes,
yay.
Definitely. First of all, everybody is just dying laughing. You're awesome.
Oh,
like, seriously,
you.
You're great.
Thank you so much.
Since you were talking about the It Happened In series, Comedy Concepts is one of our listeners in the chat. He wanted to know if you thought those books would make a good TV series. He thinks they would be fabulous.
Ah,
and
thank
you.
Yes.
And that's Nancy. Comedy Concepts is Nancy
correct.
Lombardo. Hi, Nancy.
Nancy Lombardo.
Hey, Nancy.
Good question. Good question.
Well, Nancy has I've done Nancy's radio show, Comedy Concept, and Nancy is fantastic as a comic, as a host. And Nancy has actually been a big supporter of the book. She's read the series, and and she's actually bought a lot of them as holiday gifts as well. And the books have been – they're like 30 – small moments in history on each of the things. Like, for example, in the New York, you know, in the New York book, it's things that people don't know about. So, for example, you know, you'll know about the Statue of Liberty, but you don't know the behind-the-scenes stories of the Statue of Liberty. And, you know, like, you know about Niagara Falls, but you don't know about the day they turned off Niagara Falls. They literally turned off the falls. So these are all moments in history that would make, I think it actually would make a fantastic television show, because people always like that type of behind-the-scenes stuff.
I do.
And it's and it's got, I mean, everything in it. There's love stories in it. There's pirate stories. I mean, in all true things, there's stories about how Woodstock started as a sitcom idea. There's stories of the first reporter that went undercover into an insane asylum just to find out what it was like, and she stayed in there. Nellie Bly stayed in there for 10 days, and they weren't sure her editor could get her back out. I mean, so each individual story is like an encapsule of, you know, moments in history. But all really, really, not the dry stuff, like with just the dates, this, 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 and this. It's all, like, stories about, you know, colorful characters in history. So I would love for that to be made a series. And now my, so those are the Inhappenden books. And then I have the new series that I've been asked to write, which is The Myths and Mysteries. And that's my latest book that came out, with is which is True Stories of the Unsolved and Unexplained. And the one that just came out is Myths and Mysteries of New Jersey. And so, like, we have things in it like the darker side of Thomas Edison. I mean, you know, he's known to be a hero by many people. And, you know, obviously he was, because he did invent, you know, a lot of things. But he also did a lot of experimentation that led to the execution of thousands of animals and ultimately a man. And so there are just things in the book that people don't know. So it's all, you know, unsolved mysteries, cold cases, you know, hauntings, and that's another series that I'm working on now. And actually, when you couple the mysteries book, like The Myths and Mysteries of New Jersey, with It Happened in New Jersey, it actually makes like a really cool gift to give to somebody, which is what a lot of people are luckily doing this holiday season.
Well, that's what I was going to
recommend.
Ask you.
I'm going to order one first. So which one would you recommend, or right now? So which one would you recommend I get right now?
If you, out of the It Happened or out of all my books?
Oh, out of It Happened.
Out of It Happened in series, I would say that I would get, if you travel to New York City, I would say get the It Happened. My two favorite at the moment are It Happened in New York City and It Happened in New Jersey. There are really cool stories of It Happened in New Jersey. The terrorist attack, it was not 9/11, was not our first terrorist attack. There was another terrorist attack that happened almost on the scale of 9/11 many, many years before there, where there was shrapnel on the back of the Statue of Liberty, and the repercussions of the explosions were felt as far away as Maine, and the Brooklyn Bridge actually shook. So there are just really cool stories in the I would actually say, if you were going to get it, I know it sounds crazy, but I would say get The Myths and Mysteries of New Jersey coupled with It Happened in New Jersey.
Okay.
I like that answer, and I'm going to take her up on that too, Nikki, but I see our time is almost up now, and I want to encourage all of our listeners to think about Fran's books for holiday gifts. But,
the world's fastest talking woman did not talk fast enough, because we ran out of time before we got through everything.
We ran out of time, Fran. Thank you so much. You have really entertained and enlightened us today. You are a terrific guest, and I hope that you'll come back. You have so many things to talk about. We'll certainly be in touch with you about coming back on the show again. So,
I would love
to. Thank you.
The only thing I just want to add is, if people want autographed copies of the book, they would go to my website, francapo.com, and then I could send them autographed copies, as opposed to them just ordering it random, where they would just get a copy.
Right. So I encourage the listeners to go over to francapo.com. You won't be sorry. Like Fran, her site is very entertaining, and you'll get to see a clip of her of her June East. Now, time to wrap up the show. So this is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout-out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support. And, of course, thanks always to Nikki and Jazz for everything they do to help with the show. And another big, big thank you to Fran Capo for being such a wonderful guest. Please come back next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, when our tribute to the great holiday classic, A Christmas Story, will be rerun along with a live chat. If you remember from last year, Zach Ward, who played the scary redheaded bully, reminisces about his experiences filming A Christmas Story during this popular episode, and it will give all of the fans of that particular movie a chance to share their opinions and comments about A Christmas Story. In the meantime, don't you forget to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. Now, as usual, here's A.J. Daniels to take us out with a song we dedicate to all our wonderful Blog Talk Radio listeners.